John Loudon is the co-founder and managing member of Silverstone Capital Partners. A little bit of information about Silverstone Capital. The firm was founded by an experienced group of Wall Street and banking professionals with the goal of providing high-quality, creative, insightful services to clients seeking advice and capital for their expansion, acquisition, restructuring, or liquidity needs. Thank you for joining us for this interview today, John.
Sure, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
Okay, well, just to start off, could you please describe briefly your position now? What do you do in private equity? I gave a little bit of background there, but yeah, if you could just add how you got into the industry and that sort of thing.
Sure. You know, currently I'm one of the managing members of Silverstone Capital Partners. We're a boutique private equity, but I would probably call us a private equity / investment banking firm.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is it's especially in today's market space, it's a little challenging to take cash and then redistribute that cash into projects and funding, especially in, you know, whether it's real estate or renewable energy or medical or wherever you're trying to deploy that capital.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little challenging to take it and then tell a client that we're going to definitely place it in a certain period of time and provide them with a return.
Sure.
So that
gives you a little more flexibility in being able to determine what's best for your investment rather than trying to meet investors' demands all the time, right?
Exactly, and I think that's where a lot of, from what we're seeing, is we're seeing a lot of firms that are reinventing themselves, much like we are, into more investment banking and advisory services, as opposed to private equity, because I can't
sure.
tell you that, you know, we can take, you know, $10 million today and have it deployed by the end of the month. It's not
Absolutely.
Going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen a lot of firms, you know, changing their general model just to adapt to the current climate. And it's a lot to do with investor demands and just being able to, you know, do the best deals that they can.
Yeah, and to take the pressure off yourself. I mean, there's
sure.
if you know, you tend to make poor decisions when you're put up against a wall, and especially when you work so hard to raise the capital,
mm-hmm.
you feel obligated to place that capital. And the best thing to do is to manage expectations properly, and especially in this market space where there's no doubt, if you just look at real estate, that the bottom has not hit yet.
Sure.
So with that being said, you know, it's hard to take somebody's dollar and say that you're going to deploy it and it's not going to be worth 80 cents in a year from now.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a matter of searching for the right deals, keeping your feelers warm on where the pockets of capital are and where
mm-hmm.
the cash is moving to and from and what the restrictions are on that. And then finding those deals and massaging those deals in order to take advantage of those opportunities.
Sure. Okay. And then I was wondering, what was your professional experience prior to entering the private equity industry? You worked in investment banking related field, I assume?
Actually, not at all.
Oh, wow.
Actually, a CPA by trade. Did my initial, as I call it, time with Coopers and Lybrand,
mm-hmm.
specializing in taxation and small businesses. Then moved on to work for a Fortune 500 company for a couple of years, for First Financial Management Corporation.
Okay.
Then actually bought into a mechanical company.
Mm-hmm.
And then later moved over to a CFO position of a master plan community located in Hawaii with Lyle Anderson and Jack Nicklaus for 5 years. So
oh, wow.
I was the third person brought on board right after the initial permits had been achieved and the initial funding had come in from Japan Airlines and Nomura Securities. And I was the CFO to help grow the organization from the ground level to over 250 employees when I left.
Oh, wow.
Yep. And then after that, I spent a few years working with Cushman Wakefield and Standard & Poor's,
mm-hmm.
setting up master plan communities in the Caribbean and Central America.
Okay.
So, for instance, large landholders would come to them and say, "Hey, I've got large pieces of dirt, but I don't understand exactly how I need to put all the relationships together." So, from my time working in Hawaii, my relationships to CNW, I was the boots on the ground person to help put together the relationships regarding the hoteliers selling the condo parcels, the fractional companies, the private residence clubs, the golf course designers, including Nicholas and Fazio, Troon Golf for managing, even Orvis, as far as a relationship and branding them on the property.
Wow.
So it was my job to put all these pieces together and coordinate, all the contracts, permitting, zoning, and how they all work together on the properties. So,
wow, that's a wide experience you have there. It's a lot more interesting than a lot of times we hear from private equity professionals who just have a background in investment banking and go straight from working at, say, JP Morgan over to working at a private equity firm. So that's really interesting. Do you feel like that has made you a more talented professional in terms of working in private equity and having that experience from all those different career paths you've gone through as a CFO and working in helping different companies?
Yeah, I think it gives you a more well-rounded experience when it comes to putting deals together, because you're not just looking to place money. Instead, you're looking to add value, and you're looking to create a deal in a structure that's both right for the deal and for the investor. Mm-hmm. And in today's world, we're looking as much as possible to hedge hedge the downside risk. Not too many people are worried about how much upside can I make, but they want to know that if I give you a dollar, do I at least have a backstop in the dollar that I provide to you? What's my downside risk? They're almost more concerned about that than they are the upside.
Sure.
So yeah, I think it's in all aspects. I mean, even what we do today, we mesh everything together from debt, equity, mezz, bonding, life insurance, insurance captives, all together, and as well as some other strategies in order to, really create the best financing structure. As we call it, you want to create the greatest amount of value while mitigating the downside risk associated with developing whatever project it is.
Sure. Yeah, my experience, we've worked a lot with a family office, and we've actually been interviewing them for a book we're coming out with on family offices. And a lot of them are just focused on minimizing that downside risk. That is just huge for them. Rather than, a firm that says they can, generate huge returns 1 year, but they want to know, what about the next year? Are you going to lose all that and lose all my money? And so it's a big concern.
Exactly. And who are the managers, and what is their risk, and have they hopped around, and if I invest, are they going to be there in 2 to 3 years? And
exactly.
What are their hedging strategy? I know that's probably one of the most overused words I've heard in the last 5 years, but what is the downside risk of being in this investment? And not only that, but how do I get out of it? Where's the stop loss?
Sure.
That's involved in it. So
yeah, and you could see how that would become more and more important after the recent years,
Mm-hmm.
So my next question would be, what trends do you see in the private equity industry right now?
I see a lot more people that are kind of doing what Silverstone has done and moving themselves necessarily out of the traditional private equity and moving more to investment banking, or moving themselves to private equity as a portion of their business with an emphasis on the investment banking. Again,
sure.
A lot of it is because of just the pressure to deploy the capital, and also sometimes the restrictions that are attached to that capital. So firms are having to get a lot more creative, alternative investments, offshore financing, looking for different pockets of capital, deal structures with, as you know, there's a lot of money chasing a very few amount of little of deals that are good.
Sure.
And the key element is to go in and get those deals and massage yourself as a player. I'll give you a perfect example. There's a renewable energy project that we've been working on for a year, where normally one of the big boys who would be involved in it, you know, they would charge $500,000 up front, say, get all your ducks in a row, get everything together, and then, you know, we'll take it to the market space. Well, we've actually worked for them for a year for free and not charged them anything, because they have such a great new groundbreaking technology that we were willing to put ourselves out there in our relationships and our currency with our high wealth individuals, lenders, and people that we know in the industry, in order to have the opportunity to take this to the market first, which we will have at the end of this year. So,
that's a great example.
It's going to pay off for us, and you know, we're just a boutique firm, so we're not looking to we're not going to compete with the Goldman Sachs and stuff. But where we are going to compete is our passion for the product, our willingness to put the extra time in, and to help massage the business plan as it goes along. Not just, you know, here's a plan, and you guys have spent, you know, 4 years putting this together. We were with them the last year. So we've added, there's a lot of value add that we've created along the way with answers and relationships and structure, so that they could set it up right and, again, create the greatest amount of value by the time it hits to the market space. Not let all those decisions get made prior to, having somebody come in and say, okay, what would the market space say about this project? You know, what does it say about it now? Well, a lot of the decisions, a lot of times when you look at a deal, have already been made. Here's the way it's structured. Here's the way the cap table is. Here's what's been set up as downside risk and mitigating factors. Well, those things we were able to advise them about the entire time.
Sure.
So I think at the end of the day, it helped create a better product and a better project.
So it seems like it's really important to establish that relationship. You're sort of fostering nurturing your clients, and you're looking after their interests and what's right for them, rather than only looking at, you know, how can we make the biggest profit, which some of the bigger investment banks and private equity firms might be more interested in. You're looking to establish that long-term relationship.
Absolutely. And that small, you know, that smaller touch that we can provide, and at the end of the day, it'll pay off big dividends.
Yeah. Sure. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. Well, my next question is more dealing with the career aspect for you. So what does a normal day for a private equity professional look like, or, you know, investment banking and private equity? What's your typical day, if you have one?
I wish there was a typical day. normally, when you're in business for yourself, as always, and you basically eat what you kill, you're working 24/7. If you, if I need to get on a plane for a client out in California, tonight I would be there, or if I had to get to New York for a meeting, I would be there for tomorrow. So we've had to do those things before. A lot of it is being, a lot of it is being technically savvy about how you use your time and making sure you've got your PDA and your laptop and everything else sunk up, so things make sense and you use your time appropriately. And a lot of it depends on, what projects we're working on. We work on everything from conservation tax credits to renewable energy projects to, I just came back from a lunch where someone was interested in financing a movie as well as buying some discounted property out of a major REIT. So it all depends. I mean, a lot of it in today's world, is just putting together the pieces. It's talking to as many people as possible, gathering up the pieces and putting them together.
Sure.
All right, I've got one of my partners, Byron Holly, on the phone with us.
Okay, great. And he's a co-founder and managing partner, correct?
You are correct. Yeah, managing member of the firm, correct.
Well, great. This will work well then. All right, Byron. Well, I was wondering if you could give a little bit of background on your position and what you do in private equity and how you, what your role is at Silverstone Capital Partners.
Well, my role would be very similar to my other two partners, both John and Marty.
Sure.
In the sense that we're, the three of us are all founding members of Silverstone with the objective of, really it's multifaceted in the sense that we are here to provide a service of to individual clients, high net worth clients, asset management, insurance planning, as well as capital raises for various transactions. And then at the same time, on more of an institutional level or principal level, financing various projects. And that includes everything from the entertainment space, movies in particular, to renewable energy transactions, to real estate transactions.
Sure. Okay, and I was wondering what your professional experience was prior to working at Silverstone Capital. Looks like you've worked for Merrill Lynch.
I worked for two investment firms, two different Wall Street firms, Merrill Lynch being one of them, where I held positions mainly as a retail representative, a broker, investment broker, and from there moved into A.G. Edwards, another firm I represented. I held the wore the hat of a producing branch manager as well as a representative both on the retail and institutional side, and eventually becoming a corporate officer and territory manager of the firm.
Okay, great. Yeah, it sounds like a pretty diverse background as well.
Yeah,
sorry, what's that?
I was saying that, you know, the three of us all bring a series of talents to the partnership that is a little different from one another, but for the most part, all focused in the financial arena, whether, you know, sure. John and I'll be more the CPA and real estate side. So it's still all focused on at the end of the day, the same thing, and trying to be to make a transaction, whether it be real estate or anything else, a profitable transaction.
Great. All right. My next question would be, what trends do you see in the private equity industry right now?
I believe as far as the focus of the space, both in the renewable energy, partly a mandate of not just here domestically, the current president and administration, but even internationally, where there is the anticipation of trying to get away from the energy sources we have used in the past, i.e. nuclear.
Sure.
And focusing on an energy source that can also get rid of the waste, which is another worldwide problem that we're focused on now, which is becoming the world the renewable energy. So making brown energy to green, and producing a more competitive product for the grid itself.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. It seems like you guys are pretty focused on renewable energies. I know that John talked a little bit about that. You mentioned internationally. Are you looking into emerging markets, or is there any areas in particular that you find attractive?
Well, when I say internationally, our reach is twofold. One is when I just made had more to do with renewable energy. Europe having a mandate of changing their energy from nuclear to other sources by the year 2014. Certainly, Latin America is in the same genre of trying to do the same thing. our international reach is more than just renewable energy, but also in the asset management, the financial arena.
Sure. Okay. Well, yeah, that's pretty interesting. One question I posed to John was, what does a normal day for a private equity professional look like? And, you know, he answered that there really isn't a typical day. And I was wondering if that's the same for you, or if you could walk me through your day a little bit.
Well, every day is different, as it is any profession. But
sure.
It's, you know, for us, because of some of the international exposure that we have, many times the day could very well begin at 3 a.m. in the morning, Eastern time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to accommodate our European cohorts and counterparts that we work with. But
sure.
For the most part, that's not an everyday, but you know, it may be a weekly process event that we go through. The day typically begins with dealing with clients, current clients, and prospective clients, and then for the most part, looking for capital.
Sure.
You know, there is a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines now here in the U.S. as well as overseas, but for the most part here in the U.S., there's a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines that is looking for places to deploy capital.
Yeah.
And it's our job, our responsibility to our clientele to help locate that capital, structure a transaction that is bankable, both whether it's institutional or privately, a bankable transaction to take advantage of the capital that is sitting on the sideline.
Sure. John talked a little bit about the pressure of deploying capital for limited partners, and that's sort of some of the reason why you're shifting a little bit into more investment banking and advising role. And I was wondering if you see any major trends in the general partner, limited partner relationship like that, or your comments on that.
I think the general partner is becoming a more focused and important role in the sense that, as I mentioned, there is a lot of capital sitting on the sideline looking to deploy, which many of those assets come from pension funds, insurance companies that don't necessarily have the expertise or the skill set to identify a good transaction. And they look for general partners such as ourselves, as far as an investment banking firm, to do the due diligence, the process, to go through and weed through an attractive transaction or not. As a result of the financial crisis that we're in right now, more and more of these deals, even though has nothing to do with the balance sheet of various transactions or principals, it's just the banking isn't there as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
The capital, the equity is. It's just the debt is sometimes a little bit sparse. So there's a lot of very attractive deals out there that could and should be financed, but the only ones that are actually getting done are the strongest of all the various transactions. So there's a lot of limited partners, LPs, that would focus and hire groups such as ourselves so that they can weed through that, or they can feel that it has been weeded through, and the most attractive, profitable transactions are brought forth for potential investment.
Sure.
So it's a major role that we play, both you know, as we wear two hats, private equity as well as raising capital, as well as structuring a transaction to make it a bankable deal.
Sure. Yeah, well, I guess that would lead to has capital raising changed since the financial crisis? Have you seen it more difficult? I mean, you covered a little bit there, but I was wondering specifically in regards to the financial crisis.
Yes, I would certainly say the purse strings of the VC firms, the hedge funds, have tightened up over the years, although that has changed in more recent times, as now they're looking, you know, everyone's looking for a bargain. The debt has, which was always readily available in the past, has become just as difficult as raising equity in today's times.
Okay.
So okay, the... So has it changed? It has morphed into something much more difficult, although in more, I would say the last 6 to 12 months, equity has become more readily available than debt. But the purse strings are becoming a little bit more open. It's becoming a little easier as some of these groups are willing to take a little risk to adventure out.
Sure.
And I say that in the VC arena, not so much in corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as far as the institution, as the corporation, the Fortune 500, the environment, the economic environment is still very, very spiny. Even with the stimulus, the Feds have given us both monetary and fiscal, we have not generated the interest from corporate America to really reach out and invest back in within themselves, and certainly not within the banking. Simply because the environment, the future is still very depressed.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, if John wanted to chime in on the next question, because I didn't really ask him this, that would be great. But I was just going to ask you too. What are some important characteristics of a talented private equity professional? We have a lot of people that are going to listen to this interview are either transitioning into a career in private equity or looking to, you know, accelerate their career in private equity. And I was wondering if there are any unique skills or knowledge that you think is essential for succeeding in private equity and in your field.
Well, John, if you don't mind if I speak first,
sure.
I mean, communication is also obviously the most imperative characteristic, as you mentioned, that an individual would need to properly communicate a transaction and raise capital.
Okay. Is there any
and to make sure you're in front of the right audience when you do that? I mean, a lot of people understanding your audience is important as you're either raising money or you're trying to pitch a deal or even take in a deal. If it's an area that you do not have expertise in, or if it's an area that's a struggle, you need to make sure that you have people on your deal team that can properly present the message and shore up your team in order to make you stronger.
Do you guys think that you would sort of test whether this potential candidate for a job would have this just through the interview process, or is there anything you look for in particular to see that they have good communication skills and they're able to pitch well and, you know, listen well and everything like that?
Well, sure. The communication obviously would have to be a focus in the financial arena if you're going to be, if you're looking to participate as a private equity fund employee or a VC for that matter. Credentials is extremely important. You have to have at least demonstrated the ability, education-wise and business experience-wise, that you have the credentials to be able to identify and relay that message to a proper investment party, whether it's an individual or an institution, that you have the capability of education or experience-wise to be able to identify a transaction worthwhile for an investment.
Sure. Okay. John, do you have any more thoughts on that or pretty much cover everything?
No, I think he nailed it right on the head.
Yeah, I do too. Okay. Well, I was wondering if you two had any thoughts on the latest regulation, like the Dodd-Frank Act, and how that's affecting the private equity industry. I know a lot of firms are talking about, you know, changing where they operate, changing their investments and everything like that. So I wonder if it was affecting you, or if you just had some thoughts on how it's affecting the industry.
Directly hasn't had a impact on Silverstone Capital. Indirectly, it has impacted us in various ways. But as far as the industry, it has certainly made a change. And you know, with that legislation being passed, it has made it structure-wise probably more stable.
Mm-hmm.
But business-wise and being able to execute has made it much more difficult for various financial institutions to accommodate that legislation, those laws, and be effective in the business space.
So okay. it has certainly been a restriction and more or less a liability than it has been a positive today. Now, in time, I would imagine, again, the reason why the Dahl deck was placed so that we don't experience the same financial meltdown that we experienced in 2008. In time, I'm sure the real benefits of that legislation will come to fruition, but in the short term, it has certainly been a restriction and a change for a lot of the major financial institutions to have to adopt and accommodate and change how they've conducted business from the past.
Even look at somebody like George Soros, who wrapped up his fund because of regulations and turned it into a family office.
Yeah, yeah.
He was very outspoken about that he's tired of all the regulations and stuff. And, he wants to, doesn't want to be scrutinized as we know, compliance and regulations has topped and topped. And actually, that's one of the few growing areas of our economy right now are people in the CPAs, consulting, advisory services when it comes to compliance and regulation. That sector of business is booming, and they can't find enough people.
Yeah, it's a good time to be a compliance officer, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
That's one positive of it.
It's made it difficult to do business as usual, but I'm not saying it's necessary a bad thing.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
People tell.
Okay. I was wondering, from your guys' perspective, what challenges do you see many middle market companies facing in today's business environment?
Outside of lending, having access to capital, the challenges are more or less related to the economy directly. Just that things have slowed down, so it has become more difficult in the sense of just doing everyday business.
Sure. John, do you have anything
to add? No, I would agree 100%. I mean, your standard business models in today's market space don't apply, and you're having to be more creative. As we were talking about before, we're using premium finance life insurance, financial guarantees, different forms of alternative investments other than your standard, go to the bank, get your debt, get your equity, and then finance your project. Okay. You're having to be a lot more creative in the market space.
That goes for both the retail and the institutional side. I mean, you have the everyday investor, whether they're investing in equities or bonds, having a difficult time making a profit, in the sense that interest rates are very low. So those who are debt investors have reduced income or seen a reduction in income, whether it be dividends or interest. And those involved in the equity markets itself have seen a very turmoil time since 2000. As the markets have, we've experienced a lot of volatility, so there's been a lot of disenchantment as far as investment returns, which has obviously had an impact on the economy too as well. So from the top down as well as the bottom up, we've seen, and when I say the bottom up, I mean the everyday investor or income earner who's not able to support the retail markets. They're not buying and purchasing as they have in the past, whether they're counting on their income coming from a portfolio or earned income. These have been difficult times, and certainly institutionally, as we don't have the easy access to capital debt as we had in the past within the banking sector. It's just made a difficult time. But at the same time, that's created opportunity for companies like ourselves with Silverstone, as groups have reached out to look for alternative ways of getting, as John mentioned, of getting a transaction financed. And it's more important than ever to be extremely creative to find a business model or a structure, a financial model as far as structuring the investment itself or the transaction. It's more important today than it has been in quite some time, because cash isn't readily available, even though there's more capital sitting on the sidelines than we've probably experienced since back in the 50s.
Sure. Okay, well, that was some great insights on, you know, what companies are facing today. It does seem like it's given you, given firms like yours that are creative and adapting to the environment, some opportunities. So there's a little bit of a silver lining to it.
Absolutely.
So my next prepared question would be, what is your, you know, number one tip for working in the private equity space, or like one mistake or technique you use that could save or earn someone, you know, money or save the firm some money? So basically, what's a mistake to avoid or something that you should definitely do if you're trying to work in the private equity industry?
Well, I'll mention more in a satellite view. It's reputation. You've got to avoid making a major mistake, because mm-hmm. the reputation of the firm is carried forward by the accomplishments or non-accomplishments that the private equity firm may experience. So taking on a transaction is so important to a private equity firm when they decide this is a transaction they're going to take on, after they've gone through the due diligence, that they can successfully complete that transaction. If not, the reputation of the failure of that can really defeat and hurt the credentials of that particular firm. So as far as a startup private equity firm, or even an experienced private equity firm, it's the ability to correctly identify a transaction that they feel highly probable as far as successfully completing.
Okay. Great. I think a lot of listeners will find that valuable.
Yeah, I would also put in there, make sure that you know your deal inside and out. Nothing worse than going to a meeting when someone else knows more about your deal or your industry than you do. So
sure.
It's important to make sure that you're well-versed and that you've covered all the points. Again, this gets back to reputation too, but so you're not embarrassed and you know, be in industries that you understand, not just fling things at the wall and hope that they fit.
You
know, be a true, so we always talk about what we do is more of this financial engineering. We are truly trying to put together the pieces and put them in the right order and snap the Legos together so that they make sense to all the parties that are involved that have to buy into the project and then eventually release the cash and build it out.
Great. All right, well, thanks for those insights. I'm sure listeners and readers will really, really benefit from you guys' experiences. So thank you for joining us. We had today Byron Hawley and John Loudon, managing members at Silverstone Capital Partner. And I just want to thank you again for joining us. I feel like it was a really good interview, and I think people will really enjoy it.
All right, sounds great. Thanks again, Theo.
All right, I'll talk to you guys soon.
Take care. You too.
You too.
Bye-bye.